Let me tell it to you like this: inside one's head there is a brain. Now that brain is blind, deaf, and dumb. It can only go about animalistic procedures, and it has no real knowledge of what it feels like. For an illustration, let us say that the very high entity so-and-so wanted to experience what it was like to be burned. Well, in his own body he would not be able to get down to the rough, crude vibrations necessary for one to feel the burn, but in this lower entity body, yes, burns can be felt. So the super entity enters the substitute body and then the necessary conditions occur, and perhaps the super entity can get to know what it is like through the experience of its substitute. The body can see, the brain cannot. The body can hear, the brain cannot. The body can experience love, hatred, and all those sort of emotions, but the super entity cannot, so it has to get the knowledge by proxy. Then all these bodies are all alive and ready to be used by anyone who comes along? I asked. Oh no, far from that. You cannot enter the entity into the body if it is for the wrong purpose. The super entity must have an absolutely authentic good reason for wanting to take over a body. It cannot be done from his sexual interests or his money interests, because they do not help in the advancement of anyone on the world. It usually happens that there is some task being done by the gardeners of the world. It is a difficult task because, being super brains, they can't feel things, they can't see things, so they make arrangements for an appropriate number of them, the super brains, to take over a body and come down to Earth and pose as Earthlings. I always say that the biggest trouble is the awful smell with these bodies. They smell like hot, rotting meat. And it might take one half day before one can overcome the nausea occasioned by such a takeover. So there really is no way in which a super entity who possibly has gone wrong somewhere can victimize the substitute body. It can watch what others are doing, obviously, but nothing can be done which will harm the super entity. Well, all this is a terrific puzzle for me, because if a super entity is going to wait until a body is perhaps 30 years of age, what is going to happen about the silver cord? It's obvious that the silver cord is not just cut off, or I suppose the body in waiting would just decay. No, 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 Lobsang, the Lama replied. These substitute bodies have a form of silver cord which leads to a source of energy which keeps the way open for the body to be occupied. This is known in most religions of the world. The silver cord is by metaphysical means connected to a central source, and the people who look after these bodies can assess their condition through the silver cord, and they can add nourishment or take away nourishment, depending on the condition of the body. I shook my head, baffled, and said, "Well, how is it that some people have the silver cord emerging from the top of the head while others have it emerging from the umbilicus? Does it mean that one is better than the other? Does it mean that the belly button exit for the cord is for those not so evolved?" No, no, not at all. It doesn't matter in the slightest where the silver cord emerges. If you were of a certain type, you could have a silver cord emerging from, say, your big toe, as long as the contact is made. That is all that matters. And as long as the contact is made and kept in good order, the body lives on in a state of what we call stasis. That means that everything is still. The body organs are functioning at their very, very slowest, and throughout the whole of a year a body will consume less than one bowl of tsampa. You see, we have to do it that way, or else we should be forever traipsing along these mountain tunnels making sure that a body is being properly looked after, and if we had people come here to feed the bodies, then it would actually do harm to the body, because a person could live under stasis for several million years, provided it has the necessary attention. And that necessary attention can, and is, given by way of the silver cord. Then can a great entity come down and have a look to see what sort of body the super one is going to occupy? No, said the Lama. If the entity who is going to take over a body saw the body unoccupied, he wouldn't dream of entering such an ugly looking thing. Look, come with me, and we will go into the Hall of Coffins. So saying, he picked up his books and his staff, and rose to his feet rather shakily. I think we should look at your legs first, you know, because you appear to be in considerable pain. No, Lobsang, let's have a look at these coffins first, and then I promise you we will do my legs. Together we walked along fairly slowly, the llama consulting his chart every so often, and then at last he said, "Ah. We take the next turning left and the next turning left again, and there is the door which we must enter." We trudged on up the path and turned to the left, and took the first turning left again. And there was the door, a great door looking as though made of beaten gold. As we approached a light outside the door flickered on and then steadied into constant light, and the door swung open. We went inside, and I stopped a moment taking in the rather gruesome sight. It was a wonderfully appointed room with a lot of posts and rails. "This is for a newly awakened body to hang on to, Lobsang," said the llama. "Most times they are a bit giddy when they are awakened, and it is rather a nuisance to have one just awakened fall flat on his face and mar his features so much that he cannot be used for some time. It upsets all one's arrangements, and then perhaps we have to get a different body and a different entity, and that makes a lot of extra work. None of us appreciate that in the slightest. But come over here and look at this body." Reluctantly I went over to where the llama beck. "Want." I wasn't fond of seeing dead bodies, it made me wonder why humans had such a short lifespan, short indeed when you know of a tree which is about 4,000 years old. I looked into the stone coffin and there was a nude man there. On his body he had a number of, well, it looked like needles with thin wires coming from them, and as I watched every so often the body would give a twitch and a little jump, a most eerie sight indeed. As I watched he opened sightless eyes and closed them again. The llama Minyadon up said, "We must leave this room now because this man is going to be occupied very, very soon, and it is disturbing for all of them if there are intrusions about." He turned and walked out of the room. I gave a last look around, and then I followed quite reluctantly because the people in the stone coffins, men and women, were quite nude and I wondered what a woman would be doing occupying one of these bodies. "I am picking up your thoughts, Lobsang," said the llama, "why shouldn't a woman be used for some things? You must have a woman because there are some places where men cannot enter just as there are certain places where women cannot enter. But let us move a little more quickly because we do not want to delay the waiting super entity." We moved a bit more quickly, and then the llama said, "You seem to have quite a lot of questions, you know, why not ask them because you are going to be a super llama and you have to learn an incredible amount, things which are taught to about only one in a million of the priesthood." "Well," I said, "when the super entity has entered the guest body what happens then? Does he rush out to get a jolly good meal? I'm sure I would." The llama laughed and replied, "No. He doesn't rush anywhere. He is not hungry because the substitute body has been kept fed and well nourished, ready for immediate occupancy. I can't see the point of it, though, master. I mean, a superentity one would think he would enter a body which had just been born instead of all this messing about with dead bodies which are like zombies. Lobsang, just think for yourself. A baby has several years before it learns a thing, and it has to go to a school. It has to be subject to parental discipline and that is a real time waster. It wastes perhaps 30 or 40 years, whereas if the body can do all that and then come to these coffins, then indeed he is worth much more. He knows all the conditions of life in his own part of the world, and he doesn't have to spend years waiting and learning, and not being at all sure of what it is all about." "I have had experiences already," I said, "and things that have happened to me, well, they don't seem to have any sense in them. Possibly I shall get some enlightenment before we leave this place. And, anyhow, why is it that humans have such a terribly short lifespan? We read about some of the sages, the really wise people, and they seem to have lived 100, 200, or 300 years, and still look young. Well, Lobsang, it is just as well to tell you now, I am over 400 years of age. And I can tell you exactly why humans have such a terribly short life. Several million years ago, when this globe was in its infancy, a planet came very close and almost hit this world. In fact, it was driven out of its orbit because of the anti-magnetic impulses from the other world. But the other planet did collide with a small planet which it shattered into pieces which are now known as the asteroid belt. We shall deal with that more extensively a bit later on. For the present, let me tell you that when this world was in formation, there were tremendous volcanoes all over the place, and they were pouring out gouts of lava and smoke. Now, the smoke rose up and formed heavy clouds all around the earth. This world was not meant to be a sunshine world at all. You see, sunlight is poisonous. Sunlight has deadly rays which are very harmful to a human being. Well, the rays are harmful to all creatures. But the cloud cover made the world like a greenhouse. All the good rays could come through, but the bad rays were shut out, and people used to live for hundreds of years. But when the rogue planet came so close, it swept away all the clouds covering this earth, and in the space of 2 generations people had a lifespan of 70. In other words, 70 years. The other planet, when it collided and destroyed the smaller world to form the asteroid belt, spilled its seas onto this world. Now, we have water forming our seas, but this other world had a very different sort of sea. It was a petroleum sea, and without that collision this world would have had no petroleum products, and that would have been a very good thing, because nowadays drugs are taken from petroleum and many of the drugs are harmful things indeed. But there it is, we just have to live with it. In those early days all the seas were contaminated with the petroleum products, but in time that petroleum sank down through the seas and through the seabeds, and it was collected in great rock basins, basins which were the result of volcanic influences under the seabed. In time the petroleum will be quite exhausted, because the type of petroleum available now is of a type harmful to man. Its combustion causes a lethal gas to be formed. That causes many, many deaths, and it also causes pregnant women to produce sickly children and even, in some cases, monsters. We shall see some of these very shortly, because there are other chambers we are going to visit. You will be able to see all this in the third dimensional stage. Now, I know you are bursting to find out how photographs could be taken 1 billion years ago. The answer is that there are tremendous civilizations in this universe, and in those days they had photographic equipment which could penetrate the deepest fog or the darkest darkness, and so photographs were taken. Then, after a time, the super science people came to this earth, and they saw people dying like flies, one could say, because if people can only live until 70 years of age, that is very short indeed and does not give one the opportunity to learn as much as one should. I listened with rapt attention. I found all this utterly fascinating, and in my opinion the Lama Minya Dondup was the cleverest man in Tibet. The Lama said, "We here on the surface of the earth know only half the world, because this world is hollow, as many worlds are, as the moon is, and there are people living inside. Now some people deny that the earth is hollow, but I know it is from personal experience, because I have been there." One of the biggest difficulties is that scientists all over the world deny the existence of anything which they did not discover. They say it is not possible for people to live inside the earth, they say it is not possible for a person to live several hundred years, and they say it is not possible that the cloud coverage, when swept away, cause the lifespan to shorten. But it is actually so. Scientists, you see, always go by textbooks which convey information which is about 100 years old by the time it reaches the classrooms, and places like this, this cavern where we are now, were put here specially by the wisest men who lived. The gardeners of the earth could get ill just the same as the native humans, and sometimes an operation was necessary, an operation which could not be performed on earth. So the sufferer was put into a state of suspended animation and sealed up in a plastic case. Then the medical men in the caves would send special etheric messages for a hospital spaceship, and the hospital spaceship would quickly come down and take away the containers with the people who were ill sealed inside. Then they could either be operated upon in space or taken back to their home-based world. You see, it is easy to travel at a speed much in excess of light. Some people used to say, "Oh, if you travel at 30 miles an hour, it will kill you, because the air pressure would blow out your lungs." And then, when that was proved false, people used to say, "Oh, man will never travel at 60 miles an hour, it would kill them." And then the next statement was that people would never travel at a speed faster than the speed of sound, And now they are saying nothing can ever travel faster than light. Light has a speed, you know, Lobsang. It is composed of the vibrations which, emanating from some object, has its impact upon the human eyes, and the human eyes see what the object is. But quite definitely, within just a few years, people will be traveling at many times the speed of light, as do the visitors here in their special spaceships. The ship outside in the other chamber, that was just getting ready to take off when the mountain quaked and sealed the exit. And, of course, immediately that happened all the air in that chamber was exhausted automatically and the people aboard were in a state of suspended animation, but they had been in suspended animation so long that if we tried to revive them now they would probably be quite insane. That is because certain highly sensitive portions of their brains would have been deprived of oxygen, and without oxygen they die, and the person who has such a dead brain, well, they are not worth keeping alive, they are no longer human. But I am talking too much, Lobsang. Let's go and look at some of the other rooms. Master, I would like to see your leg first because we have here the means of healing it quickly and it seems wrong to me that you should suffer when, through this super science, you can be cured very, very quickly. All right then, Lobsang, my budding doctor. Let us go back to the place of health, and we will have a look at my leg and see what we can do. Chapter 5. We walked along the corridor which separated room from room outside the main chamber, and soon we came to the medical health room. In we went, and on came the lights as bright as before. The place looked untouched, there was no sign that we had been there previously, no sign that our dust-covered feet had left tracks, it looked as if the floor had been newly polished and the metal fittings around the central pool newly burnished. We observed that just in passing, and it stirred in my mind a thought of more questions. But first of all, Master, will you put your legs in the pool now, and then I will take off these bandages. The Lama swung his legs into the pool and sat on the tiled edge. I got in, and unwound the bandages. As I got down near the flesh I felt sick, sick. The bandages here were yellow and thoroughly beastly looking. Whatever is the matter with you, Lobsang? You look as if you have had too much strange food to eat. Oh, Master, your legs are so bad, I think we shall have to try to get monks to come and carry you back to Chakpori, I said. Lobsang, things are not always what they seem. Take off all the bandage, take off all the wrappings, do it with your eyes shut if you like, or perhaps I should do it myself. I got to the end of the bandage, and I found that I should not be able to take that off because it was stuck in a perfectly horrible, gooey, scabulous mess from which I recoiled. But the Lama reached down for the bundle of bandage and gave quite a tug, and the end came away with syrupy strings of something dangling from it. Without turning a hair he just tossed the bandages down on the flooring, and said, "Well now, I am going to press this valve and then the pool will fill." I had it turned off before because, obviously, we didn't want you undoing bandages when you are up to your waist in water. You get out of the pool and I will turn the water on faster. I hastily clambered out, and took a look at those horrid legs. If we had been in Chakpori or somewhere like that I think both of them would have been amputated, and what a thing that would be for the Lama Minyadondup, always traveling around to do good for someone. But as I looked slabs of stuff fell off his legs, slabs of bilious yellow and green material fell off his legs and floated on the surface of the pool. The Lama hitched himself a bit higher out of the water and then turned the valve on more so the water level rose and the floating material floated out through what I suppose was an overflow device. He looked at the book again, and then made certain adjustments to a bunch of well, I can only call them valves, they were different colored valves, and I saw the water changing color and there was a very medicinal odor on the air. I looked at his legs again, and now they were showing pink, pink like on a newborn baby. And then he hoisted his robe a bit higher, and went a bit further down the sloping bottom so that the healing water went halfway up his thighs. There he stood. Sometimes he would stand still, sometimes he would walk slowly around, but all the time the legs were healing. They went from an angry pink to a healthy pink, and at last there was no trace of the yellow scab, no trace at all, it had gone completely, and I looked up from his legs to take a look at the bandages I had taken off. I felt my scalp tingle. The bandages had gone, no trace of them, not a mark, they had just gone, and I was so shocked and astonished that involuntarily I sat down, forgetting I was in the water, medicated water at that. When sitting down in the lotus position, well, if one is doing it in water, one should keep one's mouth shut. The taste was horrible. And yet it wasn't, it was pleasant. I found that a tooth which had been giving me some trouble since I fell some time before ceased to trouble me. I could feel it in my mouth. I stood up quickly and spat over the edge of the pool. Yes, there was the tooth. It was cracked in half. Now it lay there in front of me, and I said to myself, "The blast you, now you go and ache as much as you like." As I looked at the tooth, I saw an absolutely weird sight. The tooth was moving, moving towards the nearest wall, and as it touched the wall it disappeared. There I stood like a fool, dripping with water from my shaven scalp to my bare feet, trying to look at something that wasn't there. I turned around to ask the Lama Miniadondup if he had seen it, and he was standing over a certain place on the floor where the tiling was of different color, and warm healing air was coming out of the floor, and he was soon dry. "Your turn, Lobsang," said the Lama. "You look like a half-drowned fish, so you'd better come over here and get yourself dry." Truth to tell, I did feel like a half-drowned fish, and then I thought, well, how can a fish be half-drowned when it lives in water? So I asked the Lama how it could be, and his reply was, "Yes, it is perfectly true. One can take a fish from the water and its gills start to dry immediately. If you put it back in the water, it will actually drown. We do not know the mechanism of it, but we know it to be a fact. But you look a lot better now you have been on that healing pad. You were looking worn out before, and now you look as if you could run 100 miles. I went across and looked at his legs at closer quarters, and even as I looked, the pinkness started to disappear and his legs soon returned to their ordinary natural color, and there was no trace at all that only an hour before the flesh had been almost stripped from his bones. Here were his legs, healthy, fresh looking, and I had been thinking how they would be amputated. "Master," I said, "there are so many questions that I am almost ashamed to ask you for the answers, but I cannot understand how food and drink which has been here for endless years can still be quite fresh and quite potable. Even in our ice refrigerator, meat gradually goes bad, so how can it be that this place, millions of years of age, can be as new as though it were built only yesterday? We live in a peculiar age, Lobsang, an age where no man trusts another man. Some time ago, people in a white country absolutely refused to believe that there were black people and yellow people. It was just too fantastic to be believed, and then some people travel into another country saw men on horseback. Now, they had never seen horses before, they did not know there was such a thing as a horse, so they fled, and when they went back to their own country they said they had seen a man horse, a centaur. But even when it was known that horses were animals which could be ridden by men, still many people disbelieved it, and they thought that the horse was a special sort of human changed into an animal's form. There are so many things like that. People will not believe that anything new can be, unless they themselves have actually seen it, touched it, and pulled it to pieces. Here we are reaping the fruits of a very, very high civilization indeed, not one of the Atlantises, because, as I told you, Atlantis is only the word for the disappearing land. No, these places go back far, far beyond Atlantis, and there is an automatic means of stopping all development, all growth, until a human comes within a certain range. So if no human came here again, this place would remain just as it is now, impregnable and without any signs of corruption or dissolution. But if people come and use the place as we have done, then after a number of such uses the place would deteriorate, it would age. Fortunately we are in one which has been very, very rarely used. In fact it has been used only twice since it was made." "Master, how can you possibly tell that only twice has this place been used?" The Lama pointed up to something dangling from the ceiling. "There," he said, "if anyone passes beyond that, it shows in figures, and this one shows the figure 3. The last one is you and me. When we leave, and it won't be for 3 or 4 days, the time of our stay will be recorded ready for the next people to enter and to speculate upon who was here before them. But you know, Lobsang, I'm trying to get you to realize that the degree of civilization when this place was built was the highest which has ever been attained on this world. You see, first of all they were the guardians of the world, the gardeners of the world. Their civilization was such that they could melt rock, even the hardest rock, and leave it with a glass-like finish, and the melting would be what we term a cold melt, that is, no heat would be generated. So a place could be used immediately. But I really cannot understand why these so highly civilized people should want to live inside mountain ranges. You told me that this mountain range extends all the way across the world, and so why should they hide themselves? I asked. The best thing we can do is to go to the room of the past, the present, and the future. This is the store of knowledge of all that has happened in the world. The history you have learned in classes is not always true, it has been altered in its recording to suit the king or dictator in power at the time. Some of these people want to be known as their reign being of the Golden Age. But seeing the actual thing, the actual Akashic record, well, then one can't go wrong. Did you say the Akashic record, Master? I thought that we could only see that when we were in the astral plane. I did not know that we could come to the mountains and see all that had happened, I said. Oh yes, you forget that things can be copied. We have reached a certain stage of civilization, we think we are shockingly clever and we wonder if anyone will ever be cleverer, but come along with me and I will show you the actual truth. Come along, it is quite a little walk, but the exercise will do you good. Master, isn't there some way that I can avoid you walking? Isn't there something like a sled? Or could I pull you if you were sitting on a stout piece of cloth? No, no thank you, Lobsang, I am quite capable of walking the distance, in fact that exercise may be good for me as well. So let us set out. We did set out and I should have liked to investigate some of the interesting things. I was vastly intrigued with the doors, each with an inscription engraved on the door itself. All these rooms, Lobsang, are devoted to different sciences, sciences which have never yet been heard of on this world because here we are like blind people trying to find the way, in a house with many corridors. But I am as a sighted person because I can read these inscriptions and, as I told you, I have had experience of these caves before. At last we came to an apparently blank wall. There was a door to the left, and a door to the right. But the Lama Miniadon Up ignored them and instead he stood right in front of that blank wall and uttered a most peculiar sound in an authoritative tone. Immediately, without a sound, the blank space split down the middle and the two halves disappeared into the sides of the corridor. Inside there was just a faint light showing, a glimmering as of starlight. We went into the room and it seemed as large as the world. With a very slight sigh the two halves of the door slid across the corridor and this time we were at the opposite side of the apparently blank wall. The light brightened somewhat so that we could dimly see a great globe floating in space. It was more pear-shaped than round, and there were flashes from both ends of the globe. These flashes are the magnetic fields of the world. You will learn all about that a bit later. I stood with mouth agape. There seemed to be shimmering curtains of ever-changing light around the poles, they seemed to undulate and flow from one end to the other, but with a very great weakening of colors round about the equator. The Lama said some words, words in a language unknown to me. Immediately there came the light of faint dawn, like the light which comes at the birth of a new day, and I felt like one who had just sat up now awakened from a dream. But it was no dream, as I soon found. The master said, we will sit over here because this is a console with which the ages of the world can be varied. You are not in the third dimension now, remember, here you are in the fourth dimension, and few people can live through that. So if you feel in any way upset or ill then tell me quickly and I can put you right. I could dimly see the Lama's right hand reached out and ready to turn a button. Then he turned to me again and said, are you sure you feel all right, Lobsang? No feeling of nausea, no feeling of sickness? No, sir, I feel just fine and absolutely fascinated, and I am wondering what we shall see first.